Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcast. In this podcast, we're going to talk about fame and notoriety and our fascination with famous people, being famous for being famous, celebrity, and the national fascination, the world fascination with this thing called celebrity in podcast 589. Well, I'm actually, as the snow begins to fall again, we're into a heavy snow period. As the snow begins to fall again, I am in the process of cleaning up my sink, and I've noticed that my garbage disposal is not working. And I don't know whether I wrecked it or it's just this happens all the time. And this can happen. It always seems to happen when it's winter, and it's a long story, but anyway. This kind of cold weather can cause all kinds of problems with your plumbing, whether it's you got to keep a stream of water running, which is why I've got the water running here, to keep the pipes from bursting, or because sometimes they do burst when it gets really cold in the upper Midwest. It's been zero or less. If you have problems with plumbing and heating at this time of the year, remember Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business, because when these systems begin to develop problems, whether it's plumbing or heating problems, you want reliable service, and that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. You can call 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Of course, Ryan goes back four generations in St. Paul. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ask Ryan about improving the efficiency of your heating system for home or business when they stop by. If you have a problem, you could save enough to upgrade your heating system and save some money heading into future years if you can get it done. Call Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul for emergency service, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs too, so we're talking about Plymouth and St. Louis Park and Edina, as well as Roseville and Maple Grove and so forth. Four generations, quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems for Ryan Plumbing and Heating, residential and business. And I'll talk more about business in the future. And listen, at the end of the podcast, I got a special message for you folks who are sheet metal specialists or HVAC specialists or plumbers. Stand by for a special announcement from Ryan at the end of podcast 589. Well, I like to focus my podcasts on those thoughts that I have when I first wake up. And because sometimes that's really good stuff. They turn out to be very difficult podcasts to do sometimes because those thoughts are really not fully formed, and they bother me all day. And then I go out, I eat, I do yoga, I do all my stuff, I work all day, I come back, and then I'm thinking, well, I'll just turn on the recorder and say a bunch of stuff and it will be easy. And then I start trying to do it and it's not easy, because these first thoughts, these almost subconscious thoughts, I don't know if you do this, but if you're aware of what you're thinking, or if you try to just be, I don't know if you call it active imagination or whether you're just this awareness of thoughts. You'll be surprised at some of the deep things that you think. And then when you try to flesh them out, it's really hard to do. And I don't know why I thought this, other than the fact that I obviously watch a lot of TV and movies. I'm standing up here in the headquarters where I watch all my favorite shows with the big TV, and my pictures, which are now currently playing on the screen, the pictures from my iPhone, and the shows that I like. We all have our favorite shows and our favorite movies and our favorite songs and our favorite artists and our favorite actors and all that stuff. And I do too. And I watch a lot of TV, probably too much TV, but I get restless. Sometimes I stay up all night because I just can't go to sleep or whatever. And now the bane of my existence, YouTube, has impinged on my life too. And I almost have to. I put a picture up on Instagram of this new movie that is called I Just Want Silence. And I've kind of laughed. It was kind of tongue in cheek, but I didn't even realize it was a Martin Scorsese movie. So anyway, this morning I had two thoughts when I woke up. One is this concept of fame, and the other one is this concept that comes from something I saw last night called Aging Gracefully. And as I said, I watch a lot of TV and movies. people who listen to the Bob Davis podcasts watch a lot of TV and movies, and they like to talk about this stuff. And it's a nice break from the political nonsense most of the time, which also, oddly enough, the political nonsense today also, unfortunately, has a lot to do with being famous and saying things and having people aware of what you're saying simply because you're famous, because you're well-known. So last night I watched this documentary about Carrie Fisher and her mom, Debbie Reynolds. Both of them just died pretty famously. First, Carrie Fisher was overcome, had a heart attack on an airplane and never woke up and died a couple days later. It was right over the holidays. Her mother, who was something like 84, died shortly thereafter, saying that she wanted to be with Carrie. They were very, very closely connected in life. This documentary, and I recommend it, it's called Bright Lights. It's just a great documentary because Carrie Fisher's kind of a whimsical, very smart lady, I think, and really had a handle on this relationship that she had with her mom, Debbie Reynolds. Some of that relationship is in this movie, Postcards from the Edge, in the book. And I thought that was a great movie, which has some currency now because of Meryl Streep. She starred in the movie, and she played the Carrie Fisher character. And, of course, Meryl Streep just recently made those comments about President-elect Trump at the Golden Globe Awards, which have become very controversial, more controversial, and probably there's more audience for the comments that Meryl Streep made than there was watching the show to begin with, because nobody watches the Golden Globe Awards, because why would you? Unless you're, you know, a movie freak, and if you're, turned on by celebrity. If you're a 22-year-old female, I suppose, you sat around watching that because why not? That's something that you would watch. And I don't mean to be cruel to 22-year-old females, but I'm just saying that's the kind of stuff you watch when you're young, because what else is there? But Postcards from the Edge is a really good movie because it examines this relationship between a famous mother and a somewhat famous daughter, and this complex relationship that Carrie Fisher had with her mother, Debbie Reynolds, which is really, kind of exemplified by the fact that her mother died shortly after her daughter because she was she wanted to be with her daughter. That's what she said. So it's a good topic, because when did we become so focused on celebrity for the sake of celebrity? In other words, famous for being famous. What did Andy Warhol say, that everybody will be famous for 15 minutes or something like that? What is it like to live your life in the public eye and to have people aware of your every foible, your every misstep and mistake, every success and every failure, some people rooting for you, some people rooting against you, especially today, given the fact that a young star today, Britney Spears, for example, or whoever, I don't know, name somebody. I suppose Britney Spears is not a good example of a good, Britney Spears is not a good example of a big star today. But, they have to be subjected to the response of whatever on their Twitter feed and Facebook page and everything else, like all the rest of us. What does it say about our society that some people are so focused on this? And I'm not sure how many. I think more people than we know are focused on this question of this, this famous thing, being famous and the famous and what they do and so forth. And that's why it's a good topic, and that's why it's deeper than I thought when I started out tonight, because I thought, I'll just do this off the top of my head and it'll be easy. And I had to sit down and just collect my thoughts, because that is not, it was awful. I mean, I hope to God those podcasts never see the light of day. So what I'm talking about is the idea for being famous. Famous for being famous, like Paris Hilton or the Kardashians. That apparently originated with historian Daniel Boorstin, who defines celebrity as a person who is known for his well-knownness rather than for achieving greatness. Now, I've talked a lot about how in America today, we tend to celebrate failure more than we celebrate success. We talk a lot about failure in this country, where we used to talk about success more. We used to honor success more than we do. We tend to honor things that fail more. We tend to really fixate on people who fail or things who fail. We're very quick to point out things that don't work and to celebrate failure as opposed to celebrating success and winning. And who was it that made Winning Famous Charlie Sheen. Remember him? Another celebrity who made a concept famous in this country. Some think that the person who invented this idea of being famous for being famous was, of course, Oscar Wilde, whose slogan-like phrases or cleverly constructed quotes were designed to keep him getting invited to parties with the in crowd in New York City and elsewhere in London. According to Irish Central, which is some blog somewhere, it was his mother, Lady Jane Wilde, who taught her son the importance of creating one's own self. This versus people who did create themselves by accomplishing something, discovering a new continent, winning a big war, winning a famous sea battle like Nelson, or a famous battle like the Battle of New Orleans like Andrew Jackson, or leading a revolution like George Washington, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, or fighting the Battle of Britain and saving Western society like Winston Churchill. Right? These were accomplishments that these leaders were responsible for. Or being a great merchant like Marco Polo or John Jacob Astor or Amerigo Vespucci. Or a great industrialist like Andrew Carnegie or Carnegie, depending on how you say it. I don't know. I always called him Andrew Carnegie. Henry Ford. Even somebody like Howard Hughes, who was both famous and also somebody who was accomplished for doing a lot with what he had, both in flight and some other areas, even though he inherited the Hughes Tool Company. Or Steve Jobs, who started Apple Computer in a garage, or Bill Gates, right? These are people who actually accomplished something, became famous because they accomplished something. Or you have great political leaders like Abraham Lincoln, you know, Franklin Roosevelt, Winston Churchill, or Ronald Reagan, who also was an actor, right? People who, let's say, earn their fame by accomplishment. Now, by my reading around the late 1800s, publishing first and then later movies and radio and then television and now the internet have changed what we view as famous and changed, I think, our relationship with people who become famous. So it starts out with the 10-cent novels, which allowed certain icons of the West to be memorialized. First of all, they were memorialized in books about the West, and then the 10-cent novels. They became famous for their exploits, whether it was Billy the Kid or Wyatt Earp and the Cowboys. We all know that story. That was essentially distributed to young boys who read these 10-cent novels, and these people became icons, you know, giving rise to something called the Western, which was one of the very popular portrayals in early movies, because they said, well, what are we going to portray? And they had these 10-cent novels. So they went about this idea of portraying these great stories of the West. Then we had the newspapers of the early 20th century giving rise to these urban myths. They actually told stories about things that happened in urban centers, whether it's gangsters like Al Capone, John Dillinger, or people like Bonnie and Clyde. They made those people famous. Bonnie and Clyde, you know, they're a fabulous study because Bonnie and Clyde became the first people to really be sort of the crime. They became the sort of the icon of the crime spree. And then we get to the movies. So first the silent movies and then the talkies made it possible for people to become famous for playing real people who actually did do things and became famous for accomplishing something. So we're talking about the pharaohs and the great generals and other great leaders. Going back to the shadows of time, I'm sure that there are people who were well-known. You know, we're talking about actors on the Greek stage, in traveling troupes across the ages, the Middle Ages and so forth, who would go around try to entertain people. There were the famous bards, you know, troubadours, and later troops that traveled across the country in this country and on the frontier, played on the backs of wagons or in tents and went around and entertained people who were, I'm sure, just screaming for some form of entertainment that wasn't, I don't know what, sitting on the back of a Conestoga or something. So, and then something like Chautauqua, which is, you know, originally kind of a summertime tent show thing that would travel around and lecturers and, you know, they would put on little shows with lecturers and it kind of, it was unique because because it was substantive, and people would go to this thing called Chautauqua, especially around the Midwest. And I'm not going to say that it's vaudeville, but vaudeville grew from another thing, which was basically vaudeville is not a town, but it's a concept where people did a variety show of drama, comedy, burlesque, and music that traveled from town to town in sometimes ornate theaters that towns would construct for the entertainment of their people. You know, giving rise to the phrase, if it doesn't play in Peoria, you know, it's not going to work. Then, of course, Broadway, which is different from vaudeville. Broadway, the first theater on 42nd Street, was built by entrepreneur Oscar Hammerstein. Tin Pan Alley, which is fascinating to me because Tin Pan Alley was a collection of New York City music publishers in the late 19th and early 20th century that was from West 28th to between 5th and 6th Avenue. These publishers published sheet music that people would buy across the country to play. So you wrote a song, and if you could get it published, it became a popular ditty, right, across the nation, but people were playing it in their own homes. And then, of course, we get radio, recorded music, and the advent of talking pictures, movies. This all made celebrity something even more special in America. So all of that I just did is really just a cursory examination of the tools of transmitting this fame and celebrity to a mass population. I talk a lot about the Industrial Revolution creating mass production for mass markets. That's really what the Industrial Revolution is all about. And that was really America from the 1920s on through after World War II. That was what it was all about. And these different mechanisms, radio, television, movies, they just continued to keep churning out pictures. The studio system in LA, in Hollywood, was all about creating, you know, almost a factory that produced these pictures all the time that people got to see. Stars like Debbie Reynolds, for example, who became very famous in pictures like, you know, Singing in the Rain or The Unsinkable Molly Brown, but westerns, all kinds, Gone with the Wind, you know, we all know these sort of iconic pictures, but there were many terrible pictures, B-movies or movies that were first-run movies that weren't so good that people went to movie theaters, you know, on Thursday and Friday and Saturday night or all day on Saturday. They paid a dime or they paid a dollar or whatever, and they sat in there. And they watch matinees and cartoons and everything else. And this was a form of transmitting a culture to America, a mass culture to America, and creating these mass celebrities that everybody knew and everybody had some kind of a relationship with, even if it was somebody on some TV show like Sky King or, I don't know, you know, Emergency or some 1970s show like Rockford, something like that. So it's fascinating, and it's hard to underestimate the power of these tools to transmit this mass culture to America. And then there's celluloid, by the way. I should mention this because celluloid is a sort of plastic made in sheets from camphor and nitrocellulose, which was originally used for cinematic film. And it has a certain look to it, or a patina, that films had a look, and people who were in films had a specific kind of look that I think was unique. And oddly, today appears to be artistic, since today we shoot films on digital. So we have cameras with sensors that are supposed to look like cellulose, if we want them to. So we had people who became very famous nationwide, coast to coast, for acting on film, for playing and acting like someone else who might have been important on film, and people developed a relationship with those people. And it's fascinating to me, both for the ability to project images to the entire world, but also for the ability to transmit or create aspirational art that is projected to the world, and creating this idea of modern celebrity in this very refined sort of artistic way on cellulose first, and then television in a very unsophisticated and raw sort of way, which is actually coming into its own with cable television and with HBO and AMC making these shows like Mad Men and The Wire and Breaking Bad and others, Walking Dead, that are shot like movies, but they're serial TV shows. This is sort of the developing thing. And of course, you know, television and radio and the internet today makes people famous for all sorts of reasons which have nothing to do with anything close to accomplishment. They're just famous. And what's interesting to me, and this is kind of where I was going this morning, 2016 is the first year that I've seen where we have the sudden tally. The media now tallies celebrity deaths as though they're important. So suddenly we tally the number of celebrity deaths in a year. Believe me, they will do it again next year. So now, along with the storms, which have personalities and so become famous, like Hurricane Andrew, and the snowstorms and this and that that we tally at the end of every year, we also have the list tallying the number of celebrity deaths as though they're any more important. This is what gets to me. As though they're any more important than the 7,000 people who were killed by criminals in Chicago since 2000. But still, you know, we don't count that stuff, but we're now counting celebrity deaths. And it was amazing to me to see this outpouring of people mourning the loss of certain celebrities as though they were part of a family. Now, this is not to put these people down. I didn't know Prince. I certainly am familiar with his work, and I think he had some great songs. I've used them as bumpers in the Bob Davis podcast radio show, and I'm not against Prince. And isn't it interesting that I have to do a disclaimer? Because I don't really, it means nothing to me whether Prince lives or dies, because I didn't know the man. And so I wasn't emotionally affected by the death of Prince. I wasn't emotionally affected by the death of David Bowie. I'm not going to say that I was emotionally affected by the death of Carrie Fisher. I think Carrie Fisher and Debbie Reynolds had a... Well, I think actually Carrie Fisher, and this is just because I just watched this last documentary, had a real interesting insight to fame and a very interesting insight to... the relationship that she had with her mother. And the cool thing about The Roadshow and the documentary Bright Lights is her perspective of how strange it is to be famous and to see the pain of fading fame for somebody like her mother, Debbie Reynolds, who had starred in so many of these famous pictures through the years. And of course, some major blockbusters. So Debbie Reynolds was a massive star. And her father, Eddie Fisher, was a massive star who, by the way, incidentally, was addicted to methamphetamines, for various reasons. And Carrie Fisher describes these people as Hollywood trailer trash. And I think that's kind of funny. But I'll tell you, there's one part where she is in Colorado and she's doing this thing where she is signing these autographs at one of these traveling Comic-Con things. And hundreds of people are lining up to pay $70 a piece to get her to sign an autograph. And some of them were in tears. And later, you know, she talks about how she didn't want to do it, but her boyfriend got her to do it like 3 or 4 years ago, and she started doing it. And she said, I don't know what to think about this. I'm doing it, and I've come to the conclusion, I'm okay with it now, that I am irrevocably connected to Princess Leia. Princess Leia is me, I'm Princess Leia, even though I'm who I am, and it's a character in a movie, people don't know that. They think they're actually talking. They know, but they also don't know. So she described herself as the caretaker of this character now. And I think that showed some real interesting insight into this whole question of fame. When we think of celebrities, we think of them as they once were, when we got bonded to them somehow. Maybe we saw a character that they're playing, like Steve McQueen in Bullet, or, you know, what was the woman's, Jack, what is her name? The woman that played his girlfriend in Bullet that I just thought she was awesome. You know, who's now, you know, 75 years old, right? That woman doesn't exist. That character never existed. That person never existed, but they still exist in your mind, and you form a bond with that person. The guy that the guy in what's the show now? I forgot already because I've got so many things running in my mind. But Breaking Bad, Mr. White. Maybe you developed a tight association in your mind with Mr. White, even though Mr. White, you know, doesn't exist. So we think of these celebrities as they once were in a particular movie, as a character they were playing. And when we see them later, when they've aged, we're a little shocked because we don't live with them. So we don't live with them as they age. And by the way, this doesn't have anything to do with what it's like to be in show business or how people in show business, you know, sort of steel themselves. I'll tell you two stories. Well, I'll tell you one story. So there's a guy named Frankie Lyman who was a big star in the 50s. When I was in Pittsburgh, I programmed this oldies station, and we used to do these. We had two stations. We had a 60s and 70s oldies station, and then we had an AM, and they didn't know what to do with the AM. And Pittsburgh has this whole history of 50s rock. Like at one time in Pittsburgh, this is interesting, downtown Pittsburgh, there were like 7 or 8 theaters in downtown Pittsburgh, and all the radio stations were in downtown Pittsburgh. So kids would cruise around downtown Pittsburgh on Saturdays. They would go to these shows, and they would do all these traveling shows. And because of the location of Pittsburgh on the East Coast, they would just bus these people around, the Skyliners and Frankie Lyman and the Cadillacs and all these early rock acts would do these shows on Saturday afternoon. They would do like 4 or 5 shows. They would start on Saturday afternoon all the way up to Saturday night. And these kids, I mean, they were like 13, 14, 12, the first, you know, sort of flush of baby boomers in the mid-50s and early 50s. Well, it was really the early 50s, would go to these shows. And so downtown Pittsburgh was just packed with these kids going to these shows on Saturdays and Sundays. And we used to do these. There was a theater, I think it was the Empire Theater in Pittsburgh, and it had been remodeled, and we would do these 50s shows with this guy that put these 50s shows together. Great guy. And this guy from the Skyliners, who I don't even know if he's around anymore, Joe Rock, who has told me some amazing stories. He's the one that told me about this. And, you know, this is at the time when people, he started, because he started a doo-wop group on the street corner, and this was the history of the Skyliners, you know, who were huge stars at that time. This is before the Beatles and really before Elvis, that the music was coming up from the street corners. And Joe Rock kind of created this band called the Skyliners by first doing doo-wop. Then they started singing jingles in these studios downtown. And then they started doing these shows, and on and on and on it goes. But the story is, we used to do these 50 shows, and we got all these 50s artists who were then, many of them, I know Frankie Lyman's dead, but Frankie Lyman was there. And I'm pretty sure it was Frankie Lyman, but these people would do these shows. And you would see these old performers, I mean, really old, like they were 60s and 70s, 80s, and they would hobble up there, and when the curtain went up, he was back in the 1950s, and he performed. It was amazing. It was really, to stand there and watch that, I had chills watching that performance. And it wasn't just him, it was the Cadillacs and these guys who were these doo-wop guys that were just amazing. They were amazing, and they would get on stage, even though they were so old, they would get up there, and they would just, boom, they would turn it on. And you could just see it, and it was amazing to me. Well, that's kind of the show people thing, is that these people live for this opportunity to be on stage, just as I do, to do podcasts or to be on the radio or whatever. You live for that, and when you have to turn it on and do it, you turn it on and do it. That's what being in show business is all about, and that's what's amazing about it. But what's happened in this country is that we've become fascinated with these people, not because they're human beings who are, you know, great performers who can turn it on like that, let's say, but because they're famous, and for only because they are famous for playing someone on television, or because they're literally famous for being famous, like Kim Kardashian, someone who has become well-known because of YouTube or Twitter or some action that they've taken that has become viral. They've become very famous for that, well-known because of, or infamous, so to speak, and somehow worthy of yet more documentaries about what it's like to be this person that is supposedly famous or not famous, this person that you may or may not have heard of. And then they get up and they tell us what we should think and how we should vote and what our opinion should be. And then on top of all this, you have people who are famous in politics because they got on television. And then they're going to tell us what we think and what we're supposed to think and how we're supposed to live our lives and what we're supposed to do. And we're supposed to celebrate that, right? And we are supposed to take their points of view to be somewhat more important than perhaps, you know, somebody that really did something, or someone who has a real story who's not so famous, someone who actually accomplished something in life who's not so famous. So I guess there's a couple different things to think about. One is, you know, I love movies and TV shows. I know a lot of people listen to the podcast too. We all do, mainly because I love good stories, whether it's a good read or whether it is a good movie or a good TV show. I'd like to fancy myself as some kind of a writer of stories, although I don't do enough of it. I love things that strike me emotionally or intellectually, as opposed to just, of course, I watch a lot of trash too. I mean, I watch every one of these terrible TV shows. I can't help myself. Maybe it helps pass time, and that worries me, and maybe it helps make sense of things, which I would hope that's what I mean by aspirational art, that it helps put things in perspective, and it should be the true intent of any kind of art. But I don't think you can make art thinking, I'm going to help people put things in perspective, or I'm going to do this great thing that's artistic that's going to change the world. You just kind of put what's in you out. You can't just do it. Sometimes a painting for a painting's sake becomes a rallying cry. Sometimes a movie, because, you know, they made a movie because somebody put something together, somehow becomes something special that never fades. Did they know when they made Star Wars it was going to be the biggest movie ever? Did they know when they made Rebel Without a Cause it was going to strike the nerve that it struck in the early 50s and make a star out of the people like Natalie Wood that were in that movie? Because really, it was just one of those sort of pulp movies. Or, you know, movies like Singing in the Rain or Star Wars or Gone with the Wind or, you know, the latest blockbuster that came out this last summer, or a TV show becomes a national sensation that says more than even the writers understand. I've done podcasts about that where I've said, I think this movie actually means something. I've stopped doing that because, you know, I don't think I'm the arbiter of whether or not something means something or not. But movies like, well, shows like Breaking Bad and Mad Men or The Sopranos or The Wire are kind of icons of a time. They kind of say something about the time that they were made in, and they make comments about the time that they were made in. And the best ones are not obvious about it. The best ones are subtle, and sometimes it's not even intended, but somehow it means something else. And sometimes a song is just a one-time hit, or it becomes an icon of a certain time. We all, you know, have that experience of hearing a song on the radio and being transported back to high school, whether it's, you know, Night Ranger or Prince or, you know, Britney Spears or The Beatles or, you know, some one-hit wonder. But are we worshiping these things that seem important but really aren't? And what's really important? And do we consider people who play people are as important, if not more important, than people who are important, given the fact that Hollywood and politics kind of get together? And it's, you know, we're arguing about who Trump is going to have at his inaugural, and the stars won't come to Trump's inaugural because they don't like him. You know, this guy's going to be the president of the United States. And there used to be a thing in this country called when the president calls or when you're asked to do service, you don't say, I don't like you. I don't want any law passed. I don't want anyone to fix it. I don't think you can, and I wouldn't suggest it, but I think it's something that we should look at. I think this question of celebrity and how we think of celebrity and what it is and how important it is and who's a celebrity and why they're a celebrity is a reflection of the purity of our culture, for lack of a better term. You know, the idea that we used to celebrate people who built bridges and went to the moon, and we celebrate people today who have reality shows. You know, we need to celebrate accomplishment. I just think this question of celebrity is really something we have to think about. So at the beginning of the podcast, I promised a special message for plumbers, pipe fitters, sheet metal workers, and HVAC control specialists. Ryan Plumbing is experiencing steady growth, and they need plumbers, pipe fitters, sheet metal workers, and HVAC control specialists. If you're hearing this podcast in the Twin Cities, if you're hearing this podcast in California, wherever you're hearing it, you know, you can give Ryan a call, and they're ready to talk to you about work. I know a lot of people listen listen to the Bob Davis podcast are also interested in employment, and here is an employment opportunity at Ryan. Give them a call in St. Paul, 651-224-4771, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. And don't forget those guys for emergency service. If you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, don't forget the BobDavisPodcast.com digital sponsor, Alpha Systems. They make the revolutionary angle of attack indicator. This is the system that provides a visual indicator. It's the best in the business of the amount of lift your wing is producing on that final turn to land. It's the biggest problem in general aviation. The people lose lift and they get into trouble. And Alpha Systems saves lives because it solves that problem for you. Click on the Alpha Systems banners for more info about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com. Got a picture of it there. It'll come up if you're on the page listening on the stream, which is awesome. Also, thanks for subscribing to the Bob Davis Podcast on iTunes and listening on Stitcher.com or TuneIn or BlogTalkRadio.com. And I really appreciate, of course, speaking of fame, the likes and the shares comments on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. But there's no snarkage on Instagram. Remember that. And thanks for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at the BobDavisPodcast.com. Just click on that banner at the top of the page. It's the picture of Mobile Podcast Command, a 2000 Ford Super Duty ambulance. Click on that and it'll take you to PayPal and you can donate $5 or whatever. And yes, Wayne Nelson, I got your message on the t-shirt and I'll ship that out to you if I can get to the post office tomorrow in the snow. And thanks for listening to podcast 589, the Bob Davis Podcasts.